Tonight we're going to look at a couple of things on the resurrection. Let's have somebody, Leroy, you're designated reader, so let's look up Mark 16, start with verse 1.
Okay, Mark 16, verse 1.
There's two words in this passage that I'm interested in. So listen to the passage. I go from 1, I think, to 8. And just read it straight through. And you guess what the two words I'm interested in are.
When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary, mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll the stone from the entrance of the tomb?" But when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has risen. He's not here. See the place where they laid him? But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." With trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Okay, what two words?
Well, the words that stuck out to me is "and Peter."
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, first of all, how did this angel know?
He must have been a witness.
Watching it. That's what we sometimes forget. The universe is watching. Paul says we're a spectacle to the universe. We're a play to the universe. We're the theater for the universe. So it's very interesting, very Jesus-like, to go tell the disciples and Peter. Now, who's the author of this book?
Peter.
Yeah, basically, Peter talking to John Mark, who wrote it. So, it certainly hit home to Peter, because of the four Gospels, he's the only one that puts this in there. But what a message to him. Go tell the disciples and Peter. So, don't care where we are in our spiritual journey, what happens in our relationship with Christ, if we're on the high mountains or we're in the deep valley, God never forgets us. And poor Peter, we went through last week, you know, what was going, the last couple of weeks, what was going through his mind. And still not brave enough to be at the crucifixion. Ran. But boy, of all the disciples, go tell the disciples and Peter. Okay, now I want to look at another passage. And that's John 20. And let's start with verse 11.
But Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head, the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, "Why are you crying? They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not recognize that it was Jesus. "Woman," he said, "why are you crying?"
Now stop there for a second. Why do you think she did not recognize Jesus?
We see what we're planning on seeing.
Pardon?
We see what we are planning on seeing. What we think we're going to see, we first see it. That wasn't what she thought she was going to see.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was preconceived what was going on, and what's another reason?
I had tears in her eyes.
Absolutely. Surprised, not looking at what she thought she was going to see, and she had absolute tears in her eyes. Have you ever met somebody in a totally different situation and you just can't put two and two together for a second? You kind of know them, but when you're outside of the thing, you got to look for something to connect to. And so here she was, not expecting, concerned, tears in her eyes, and yet she's talking to Jesus and doesn't recognize him. Okay?
"Well, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" Well, thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him, and I'll go get him."
See, can you feel that grief that she has, that uncertainty, that sorrow, wondering? Now, why didn't she put the resurrection together?
It never happened before.
Okay, that's absolutely right. What else?
She was focused on her grief.
Pardon?
Focused on her grief.
Correct, very good.
It was just the trauma of what had happened. Yeah.
Never connected the dots. You know, you'd want to say, why would any of them be surprised?
But she was one that understood the second coming.
Understood a lot of things, but never connected the dots. That says a lot about God's working with us. How many times do we see things and we just never connect the dots? It happens in our life all the time. And yet it's the patience of God, the kindness of Jesus, that never gets mad, very patient, and just keeps working till it comes. Next week we're going to do the walk to Emmaus, and then you'll really see the way that Jesus works. But here she is, you know, saying all she concerned was, where is the body of Christ? And she says to him, if you've taken him, just show me where you've taken him. Okay?
And Jesus said to her, Mary. Well, she turned towards him and cried out in Aramaic, Rabboni, which means teacher. Jesus said, do not hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead into my...
Okay, let's stop there. Do not what?
Hold on.
Okay, what other versions do you have?
Cling to me.
Cling to me?
King James is detain.
Restrain.
Did you say restrain? Who said restrain?
I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah, restrain, yeah. In some of the King James Version says, do not touch me. But the Greek is more, obviously the translations have picked it up. Don't detain me. Don't hold on to me. Don't grab me. What do you think her impulse was? Absolutely. Absolutely. You can imagine. What happened when the prodigal came home? That father was hugging and kissing and giving and not listening. And so you can imagine the joy. And Jesus says to her, do not detain me or do not cling to me. Do not hold me back. I've got to ascend to my Father. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week. Well, let's go through it again. Why did he have to go back to heaven?
The sacrifice was accepted.
Okay. So when he gets to heaven, what questions does he ask? Did I spill enough blood?
Was the sacrifice sufficient?
Yeah. Is it enough? Not now. We're all among friends here, so I can speak a little bit clearer than I did last week, even though it's being recorded. See, can you imagine the picture that we have of God in the way that we put it together, that Jesus normally had to go to God and say, God, did I spill enough blood to cover their sins? Do you see the picture that we put the Father in? And then we wonder why people have scared of the Father, or why we have such a picture of Him. He never did that. He went back and said to the universe, is it enough? Do you have enough evidence to make up your mind? And resounding, the answer was absolutely. We have seen what you are like, and we've seen Satan totally unmasked. And from that time on, Satan no longer had access to heaven. Why?
No one would listen.
Nobody would listen. There was not a gate put and said, I'm sorry. Nobody would listen. Up until that time, he had intercepted angels coming forth, back and forth from heaven, and he was talking to them and asking them what's going on. He had access to the universe to present whatever. Nobody would listen. So God did not put a big do not enter sign. Nobody would listen. He was unmasked. So when he went to heaven, that was his question. Is it enough? And they said, absolutely. We see. Now, if you want to get a glimpse of what heaven was like, somebody, well, Leroy, you do a good job. Or you can turn to Psalms 24. This gives us an insight of what heaven was like when Christ was coming back from the garden as he went up to heaven to talk to his Father and to ask that most important question, is it enough evidence to secure for eternity? All right.
What verse?
Just start with the first. Read the whole thing. Pay attention to the last four or five verses. Okay.
The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. Who may ascend the hill of the Lord? Who may stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart.
Can you see the universe saying this as Christ is coming home? Go ahead.
Who does not lift up his soul to an idol or swear by what is false. He will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from God his Savior. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, O God of Jacob. Lift up your heads, O ye gates.
Now listen what they sound. He's coming to heaven. Lift up your heads, O you gates.
Be lifted up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is this King of glory?
You have one side of heaven saying, who is this King of glory?
The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O you gates. Lift them up, you ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is he, the King of glory? The Lord Almighty. He is the King of glory.
So you can imagine as Christ came to heaven, the joy as they received his King. So that's why he said to Mary, don't cling to me. I've got to go to my Father. Because that was what was on his mind. Is it enough evidence? And the answer is, as he carries those nail prints for eternity, if, because in heaven we'll have free will, have freedom of choice, If we don't, it's the cruelest joke God could absolutely play on any of us to take away our freedom of choice in heaven. Why didn't He just do that in the first place and save us all this mess? But as thoughts come up, as discussions come up, as one wonders, those nail prints remind us that without God, the natural consequences simply are death. And so that's why we will be secure for eternity, because God has answered the question, is He just, is He righteous, and is He merciful? And we'll never wonder, because we have the answer. Okay, continue.
Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. For Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, I have seen the Lord, and she told them that what He had said these things to her.
Okay, let's stop there. Okay, any comments on any of this so far?
Just from the discussion so far, the impression I get is that when He was welcomed back into heaven, that there was such a resounding reception that no question had to be answered. It was answered in the welcome.
Absolutely.
It was a triumphal entry.
Absolutely.
And He wanted to make sure that everyone understood that Mary Magdalene was accepted by Him.
Mm-hmm.
That He saw her first.
That's interesting. I mean, these are the messages that I think the world is looking to hear, is how gracious and kind of a person that Jesus is. Here's Mary Magdalene, woman of ill repute. Here's Peter, who denied Him. Look at this graciousness.
Oh, the first two.
Absolutely.
To be recognized.
Absolutely. Both of them would have a hard time being on the church board at this stage of their life. So, but that's the kindness and the graciousness. Now I want to move, we're going to skip around a little bit. I want to move to Peter. I think it's just fascinating in Mark, go tell the disciples and Peter. So I want to move to the experience of Peter. And I think it's in the last chapter of John and around verse 11. See if that's right, Leroy, where Jesus comes with them and they're eating fish.
Jesus reinstates Peter?
Yeah, let's see. Hold on for that second. You know, Sabbath school class last week was a little confusing. And certainly wasn't in my mind, but I think it was in everybody else's. But anyway, what a wonderful time to give a talk on vegetarianism here by the sea when Jesus cooks them a little fish. But He chooses not to, so He cooks them up a little fish. And then here is the graciousness and the kindness of God. Okay, start with the whatever verse, 11, I think.
Well, when they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?
All right, let's stop right there. What a question. Here they are cooking, eating. Can you imagine the happiness and the joy, the conversation, the questions? And then out of the blue, He turns to Peter and says, Peter, do you love me more than any of these other disciples? Now, what would have Peter previously said?
We denied Christ three times.
Yeah, but what would he have said? We've asked this question 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 10 times 4.
Yeah, why are you even insulting me? Of course I love you more than these. I love you more than all 11 of these guys. Well, there's only 10 at that time. Judas had done hung himself. More than any of these guys. See? So here's Jesus asking a very open-ended question that can be taken many, many ways. Peter, do you love me more than these guys? What does Peter say?
Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you.
Okay. Now, is Peter answering the question?
Well, the way this translation is he says, yes, Lord, you know that I love you.
Okay. Is he answering the question?
Not the question asked. He was just saying, okay. Yeah, I love you, but I don't love you more than these guys.
That's right. He's answering a question, but he's sidestepping the question. Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Okay? Keep going.
Jesus said, feed my lambs.
What do you mean? Think that he means by that, by the way?
Teach his people?
Pardon?
Teach people about him?
Okay. What are little lambs?
Mindless.
Mindless?
Infant.
Infant? Dumb?
Constant care.
Pain? See? Yes, you know, Lord, I love you. Well, then, be a shepherd to the sheep. Pretty high position? No. Continue.
But Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?
Boy, now he's just not giving up easy, does he? Do you truly, do you really, really, you know, it's like a little grandkid, but especially Kendall, one of the ones I like. Truly, 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 Grandpa, can we, you know? So Jesus says, Peter, do you truly love me?
Well, he answered, yes, Lord. You know that I love you. But Jesus said, take care of my sheep.
Okay. All right, now we come to the third question.
The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Well, Peter was hurt. Because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things, and you know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep.
Okay, let's stop there. Why is Jesus going through this deliberate exercise with Peter?
Three times, maybe for him to remember. In Clark's commentary, it says that in the one verse, it says the Lord uses the word to feed, but another one is the Greek word that signifies to tend a flock rather than feed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why this exercise?
I think it's a reinforcement, but it's also in line of he'd been denied three times, so it's like a healing process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Peter hung on to this experience for the rest of his life. There's a big lesson, and I ought to know because I've gone through some of this for years. You can hang on to the times that you forget Christ, you let go of Christ, and the devil's very good to keep bringing that up in your life. Over and over and over. Jesus did not want Peter to go through that experience with those denials hanging over his head the rest of his life. And so he brought Peter, and God works this way. What was Peter's problem all along?
Impulsive.
What else?
Self-assurance.
Cocky. Pride. Whatever word we want to label it. This was Peter. But Jesus, God always brings you around to the same circumstances. And at the denial, all Peter was interested in, as always Peter was himself. And so Jesus comes and brings him back in a position. Peter, do you love me more than all these other disciples? The old Peter, absolutely, but not this time. The only concern he had was his relationships. Yes, you know I love you. Well, Peter, do you truly love me? Oh, yes. Then when he asked him the third time, what did it say? What was Peter's feelings?
You know everything about it.
I think Peter probably had tears in his eyes.
Oh, you better believe it. You better believe it. He was hurt. Why was he hurt? Because it drove home what he had done to disappoint his master. Then he said, you know everything. You know how much I love you. And what this experience did was to take away that guilt of those denials.
Peter's given an opportunity to affirm and reaffirm his love for the
master. Absolutely. What a golden opportunity God gave him. And then Peter asked a very interesting question that I guess that all of us would like to know is, what's my future? And here's a lesson for all of us. Here's a man that was with Jesus for 3.5 years, from all accounts didn't do a whole lot, except if he had that relationship. And Peter certainly stuck with him enough in his rest of his life, as he was telling Mark to write the book, he said, by the way, throw in that and Peter in there. And then John tells of this experience for Peter. Then listen to what Peter asked. And what's interesting, listen to the answer. That here Peter has decided that he's going to give his entire life to following Christ. He's touched, he's converted. And look what this conversion is going to get him the rest of his life.
And Jesus said, I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted. But when you're old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want. But Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. Then he said to him, follow me. But Peter turned and saw that the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This was the one who had leaned back against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who's going to betray you? Well, when Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Well, Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. But because of this, the rumor spread among the brethren that this disciple would not die. But Jesus did not say that he would not die. He only said, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you?
Okay, let's stop. Now, who's writing this book?
John
himself. So, of course, I like the disciple whom Jesus loved, who put his head on his, he's writing about himself, see. So Peter asked the question, what's going to happen to me? And what was his answer? What answer did he get? You will be crucified. For what reason?
Following Jesus.
Okay, and what other reason, though?
You talking about verse 20 where he says he was, I can't remember what verse it was, where they said that he would be taken where he didn't want to go?
Yep. He would be stretched out?
Yeah, that's what they did to people before they crucified him.
Yeah, he would be dressed. For what reason? What's the end of that sentence? Go back and read Billy Roy where he says he'll be stretched out, dressed.
Verse 19.
I take it where you have no desire to go.
When you're old, you will stretch out your hands, and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go.
Keep going.
Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God.
Do you get the picture? Sometimes the greatest suffering that we have as children of God is so that we can glorify God. Certainly doesn't help the ones going through it. But that's what we have to understand. Because we do the right things, because we accept God, and because we give to our heart to God, does not mean we're going to have an easy path. Because Jesus is telling Peter exactly what's going to happen to him because of that decision made right there. Did it deter Peter any?
Do you think Peter understood the meaning that...
I think he understood that it... I don't think he fully understood at that point, but I think as he began his work, and he started going through that he knew what the end was going to be. Yes. All the disciples, I think, when they went out, knew.
Well, I guess we say sometimes what happens to the head happens to the body.
Yeah. You know, because they knew they were going into... circumstances that most likely was going to cost her. I'm not sure Peter understood it right then, but as he grew, I'm sure he realized what was going to happen.
Wasn't it Andrew that was killed within 6 weeks after the death of Christ?
I'm not sure, but I know, you know, somebody was. And John, by the way, was, you know, he's writing this, so he has the last word. But of course, his life was saved. And he ended up. So the lesson is, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, let's go through the Bible and see that some of the most closest friends of God had horrible times. You know, the one I'm kind of fascinated with is Elijah and Elisha. You know, Elijah goes to heaven and Elisha just sometimes read what he went through. And all he asked was for just a little mantle and kind of remember to come back and get me. See? So, it's no assurance. But we can take what happens and use it to glorify God. That's exactly what the disciples did. To me, the story of the resurrection is obviously, if there was no resurrection, we have no belief. But to me, it's the little things that happen. The fact that he took time for Mary, that he messengers took time to say, go tell Peter. Next week, if we get around, we're going to do the walk to Emmaus next week. But if we get around to Thomas, we'll get around to that story. But to Peter, how he went out of his way. There's another reason, by the way, that we feel like that John included this. Outside of our good Catholic friends who believe everything's centered around Peter, if you study history well enough or the Bible, it really centered around James, and it also centered around Paul. later on, John outlived all the disciples, so he gets the last word. And so it's also felt that John put this in here as a recognition for the service that Peter did. Because in the early church, Peter was really not that big of a factor. So we think that this is where John's paying some homage to Peter, and that's why he includes this story in there, because obviously Peter went on to do a fantastic deal.
That strikes me as it really doesn't matter who's the biggest one or the leader here or there. It's everybody has their own space, their own place that they need to live and minister in.
That's exactly right.
And it's true even today and so on. It doesn't matter what this hierarchy is.
Yeah. You know, our church is going through small group ministries, spiritual gifts, whatever name you want to put on it, and hopefully we'll all realize is that it takes all of it to make the body of the church. And you can't have any weakness. And, you know, one of the things we're going to start working on is the greeters. The greeters are more important than the message that the pastor gives during the church. Because your first impression is what? The greeters.
We also talk about how the sacrifice and the suffering and so on. But I don't think they felt I don't think they thought they were suffering. And you look at your own life. If people think, "Oh, this is so hard," you just live it. And if you're connected, like the martyrs are singing at the stake, they weren't.
Absolutely. Had everything in perspective, understanding that you're glorifying God. Once you understand you're glorifying God, then none of it matters.
Yeah.
And
Peter was the one that Paul went to the first 2 weeks when he lived with Peter and Peter worked with Paul.
Yeah.
And then what's interesting, when Paul was complaining because he paid his own way everywhere and worked, he says Peter travels with his wife. And so I thought that was interesting, and that he said the disciples travel with their wives.
Mm-hmm.
You never hear about that except in that one mention.
Yeah. No, they had their...
They went with them.
Little ups and downs. Can you imagine the witness that Paul had as he went to some of the churches and said... he began his talk by saying, "I know that I killed some of your mothers and your fathers, and I know I killed some of your sons, but let me tell you how my life has changed." imagine that.
Well, they didn't trust him when he came back to the home until he had that big bag of money and gave.
Yeah. Why would they trust him?
Well,
if somebody killed your dad or killed your son, But so you imagine somebody had to overcome. You know, let me tell you about that. I was riding a horse and I got blinded. But once they understood at Pentecost, and this point is so important, at Pentecost, despite all of this, they finally recognized that this was God. And when they came to that conclusion, it changed the entire world.
We were at a table with a lawyer and another man in a very intense discussion. And I said, "Well, the crux of the Ten Commandments are to love God and love your neighbor." And the lawyer said, "That hasn't been tried yet."
Yeah. See, again, it's a reminder when Jesus said to Peter, "Do you really love me?" Yes. Remember I said the basis of judgment throughout the four Gospels is how do you treat your fellow man? It's exactly another point. What was the true test of love that Peter had for Jesus?
Feeding the sheep.
Go feed my sheep. The lowest of all jobs. Mm-hmm. Be a shepherd. to my dumb little lamb. See? So we come right back to that continuity throughout Jesus' ministry. If you love me, how do you know? What do you do your fellow man? Never changes. And that's exactly what he was saying to Philip. Feed my sheep. Take care of them. I mean to Peter. Feed my sheep. Take care of them. Once he understood that, no stopping. So, any comments? Otherwise, we're going to be through early.
Well, I was thinking, it may not be parenthetical, but in the resurrection, when dead are raised, all the saints, the deformities will be gone away. Everybody will be whole, well looking. You don't have the humpbacks, and yet Christ remains with the scars in his hands. I think that's significant. I don't know how to put it, but it must be significant.
Well, I think it is, because it's a, you know, our concept of heaven is we'll all just be happy and in harmony. Don't you think there's going to be differences of opinion in heaven? Don't you think there's going to be questions?
What about the 1,000 years for healing of the nations?
Yeah, but I think there's going to be questions for eternity. I don't know how many times I'll have to defend for eternity my knowledge of the 2,300 days. You see? Yeah. I'll have to say, now, Gabriel, come on over here. See, we have a concept is that we're just not going to be thinking. That will be, well, I think everything will be harmonious. But thought and questions and I don't understand and how come? Well, I mean, that's part of life.
You know, the lack of harmony is when you think someone else is supposed to be like you.
That's exactly right. And,
I think that's the part that will be gone from. We won't think everybody's supposed to. We won't be going around thinking, well, he should supposed to be
sure.
That.
And
see, that's where harmony.
But if there's ever any doubt that arises, and remember that Satan lived in a perfect world. And doubt entered, enough doubt that a third of the angels went with him. So if that question of doubt ever comes back up, that answers it. And by the way, we get to go to the universe and teach and share our experiences with the universe of what it was like to be without God and then to be with Him. What a wonderful experience. That's the goodness of God that we need to be telling people what He's like. Resurrection? Absolutely. But what does that do? The kindness gives us hope. Because we've all been Peter's, Mary's, doubting Thomas. We've all been those. And Jesus teaches, takes care of us with the same passion and kindness. Father in heaven, we're thankful for who you are. And we're thankful that you're patient. And we're thankful that you continually appear in our lives, showing and telling how much you care for us. We appreciate the stories of Peter, how one can deny, yet you never gave up on him. And when he went to the cross, he said, there's no way I could be crucified like my Lord and Master. And so he was crucified upside down because he cared that much for you. What a testimony. Jesus' name, amen.